Half an hour.
That won't take long. Gotta get this thing.
Say, I wanted to get, just for my own guidance and everything back by myself, reading from you on how this campaign is now. That drop in the polls of 10,
Not unexpected.
Not unexpected? Even a severe drop is that?
Not after the, first of all, the first poll after the Democratic convention was bloated, inflated in the sense of the Carter thing had been moving up and up because Carter had the nomination. The Republicans were in utter disarray, the kind of feuding that brings down nothing but bad marks, you know, the sort of divisiveness. And Carter, from the day that the last three primaries on up, was kind of the hero of the press. Everything about him, whether he had ingrown toenails or whether he shaved twice a day or what he ate. And even when you get down, as somebody said, to a point where you're so hard up for a news story that you talk about draining a fish pond, that you really, you know.
You're pretty bad.
But the whole thing built up very nicely. Then comes the Democratic convention, which was a harmonious affair.
Yeah.
And everything went off beautifully.
Yeah.
It was inevitable that he was going to be way up there in the polls, very much so. Now, ordinarily, after every convention, a candidate picks up approximately 10 to 12 points.
Has that been the rule?
That's the rule. The only time that didn't happen is since 68. And 64. The Republicans dropped in 64. The bitter few.
After Goldwater.
Goldwater and Rockefeller. And in 68, we went into that convention with a lead on Nixon.
Yeah.
A lead on Nixon. And dropped 22 points.
You dropped 22 points. After the Republican convention?
After we were the last.
You were the last.
Our convention.
After your convention. 22
points.
That was all that turmoil.
Sure. The whole buildup, all at sea. Just as their buildup was all, Carter's was all on the plus side coming up to New York. Ours was all on the downside after the Republican convention. There was old Dick Daley sitting out there, no matter what Mondale says about what a nice guy he is. There was the National Guard. There was the barbed wire entanglements. There were the demonstrators coming in, and there was the 5th Airborne being stationed, and people forget there was the strike at the stockyards so that they couldn't bring their television cameras in. Plus, the media, the electronic media, was mad as the devil that they had to leave beautiful Miami and come up to Chicago and not be able to actually have immediate projection from that auditorium. Remember, everything had to be delayed.
It had to be delayed, yeah. 22
points.
God. And what did it finally toward the end of the game?
Well, I picked it all up again.
You picked
I got back to almost what happened was when I went into that convention, I was about one or two points ahead of Nixon.
Yeah.
Even though he had had his popularity
from his
convention, and that was a very good convention.
Sure.
But we...
Oh, each state's managed that.
See, I actually cut him down. He started to lose a certain number of points in the last weeks, 2 weeks of the October.
Yeah.
And I got it down to where it was questionable on the last poll. The last poll showed him, in Harris poll, me winning by 1%, showed the Gallup poll... Nixon winning by about 1.5%, and I lost by 0.4%.
0.4%.
And mainly voter turnout is what killed us. If we'd had voter.
You know, that's the question this time, I think, voter turnout.
Of course it is.
There's a study coming out in about a week, done by some very high-powered scientific group. I forget the name. It's going to it predicts, after a nationwide survey, that the vote this time will perhaps be the lowest since universal suffrage was.
Well, if that's the case, we're in trouble.
Real trouble.
I just left two of my colleagues. I don't want to bring their names into it because that might not be proper. Both rip-roaring Democrats. And both of them said to me this morning, "You have a funny feeling about this election." I said, to one of them, I said, "Why do you say that?" He said, "I just woke up this morning. All at once it just dawned on me that we might lose." And I said, are you kidding? He said, no, no. He said, I'm very serious about it. He said, you know, I was having breakfast with my wife, and I didn't even bring it up to her. But before I left home, she said, have you, what do you think? You have the feeling that this maybe is unreal, that we might lose? And I said, two of you at the same time without communication in your home? He said, absolutely. Now, that's a fact. Now, I'll tell you, I was with people last night, same thing. Good Democrats, who said it's just something unreal about what's going on. Now, the thing that's dangerous is what you put your finger on right now, and it's what I've been saying from the beginning. Yeah. In fact, all the memos that I have out to Minnesota are not on issues. I said, vote, get out the vote. And I've just got right here my reports, and they're what we're doing to get out the vote. I met with the labor people, get the phone banks out, get the registration cards out. I've been raising the devil, as you know, about registration out in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Our Democratic registration is down 12% in Minneapolis. Republicans is up 5%.
12%? Republicans up 5%.
Because we haven't registered them. You're not apathetic. We got the governorship, we've got the legislature, we've got the county commission, and so help me, we've got postcard registration, and our own people are such a bunch of penny pinchers that they wouldn't appropriate the money for the postcards. That's true.
Well, this study shows that these are not just vague, marginal people who are not going to vote, but they're thoughtful.
Yes.
Who have said in answer to this nationwide question, very careful, not just in Gallup, I guess. Yeah. Well, we don't think it makes any difference which one is in it. No. Now that, we're going down, Jane and I are going down to see Carter on Wednesday. I think I'm going to talk about this.
They must talk to him about that. The important thing. This is the all important thing. Yeah. And what he ought to have Mondale doing is simply one thing. And that is going around this country before every known Democratic group, and insisting that they redouble their efforts on registration and get out the vote. Plus the fact there are no money limitations. Here is where you get the advantage without having to be held under the $22 million restriction, because the labor movement can spend money to get out the vote and register.
And they have
and they used to spend fortunes. The state party, for example, in my state, I intend to get the party to have a major concert in which we bring in stars to raise maybe $100,000 for a registration and get out the vote drive. For the party, can do, I got limits on how much I can spend.
Here I am.
But, and therefore my money can, very little of it can be spent on get out the vote.
What's the deadline for registration?
The deadline for primary registration is this end of this week.
Yeah.
But the deadline for the registration for the general election is just about a week before the election.
Oh, you could up to
very
time.
Close, yeah.
Well,
I forgot the date.
Some margin of time.
Yeah, we got 10 days before the election, like that.
Well, you're in trouble.
No, I don't think so, but this is a crazy year. You don't know what people are going to do. Every poll indicates that I'm, a huge victory. Huge victory.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the case. But depends again on voter turnout. Now let me give you a classic example. The young man that was the mayor of our city, Al Halstead. He was selected as one of the 10 outstanding young men of America, of the JCs. One of the 200 outstanding men of America by Time in their special edition, on their bicentennial edition. He was ahead 30% in the poll. Running for re-election as mayor and lost.
Come.
Now why do you think he lost? Because they didn't vote.
They didn't vote.
There was no opposition to any Democratic candidate in 4 wards out of the 13 in Minneapolis. So, and out of the 13, 8 are, 7 are strong Democratic, 1 marginally.
Yeah.
And the rest of them, are 5 of them are about, 4 or 5 of them are strong Republican.
Yeah.
Now out of the Democratic wards, 4 of them had no opposition at all.
Yeah.
So that they didn't even get their organization out to get, the alderman, if you get 2 votes, he's elected. So that in a ward where a Democrat should have won by 20,000 votes, He won by 3,000. Because, see, the mayor had a bitter opposition. But the alderman didn't get anybody out. He didn't put his organization to work. And he didn't have to, and there was lethargy. And the interesting thing is that the people that were advising this young man said to him, "You don't have to do this. Keep a low profile. You've got it won."
What terrible advice. God, it must have been shocking.
And here he won. He was ahead 30 points. And 30 points, not 20, 30. Oh, and he lost by, what is it, about 100 and some votes?
Very small.
A little over 100 votes. And the lowest voter turnout Minneapolis has had in, I don't know, I guess the last 50 years.
Well, that's exactly the prophecy of this study. Mm-hmm. It's been caused by this black effect. Now, you see, on the other side of it, the Republicans, the old hardline Republicans, are adept at, they vote.
Oh, they'll vote, they'll walk through fire and rain and hail.
Right. And that's the difference.
Well, this is why you got to get the vote out. Now, I think what Carter will tell you is that there's real efforts being made now amongst the blacks.
Yeah.
See, in 1968, if I could have gotten the black vote out, I got 98% of all the voters black that came out.
That did come out.
But there weren't very many voters registered, first of all. We'd only had 2 years of the Voter Registration Act.
Yeah.
And they didn't get them out.
No, if you'd had more of them out, you would have won.
Sure, sure. Would have won in a state like New Jersey, like nothing.
Okay.
See, we only needed to change.
You think Carter's aware of this?
Well, I think so. I do, yes. I think he's got to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And that's why we're raising money for the Democratic National Committee.
Yeah.
So that the National Committee
can do this job.
Can do this job. And that's all it ought to do.
One concentrated effort.
Concentrated total effort.
Yeah. What? How is your business with the majority leader?
Fair. I think that we're in business. I keep working at it all the time. Bobby doesn't have it sewed up at all.
No.
He pretends he does.
He does.
But he doesn't. I think I got about right now 18 sure, maybe a few more. Now, then Fritz Hollings has got some. He's got about 15 sure.
Really?
About that. And that would mean that that we've got a majority between us.
Yeah.
And you have what you call the low man out.
You mean when you vote?
When you vote. So that it gets down to two.
Two, I see. When does the vote come?
It'll be as soon as the Congress reconvenes.
After January.
After January.
I see. Yeah.
And I personally believe that what my task is to convince the senators that I really want it.
Yeah.
And because there are enough votes there that are not for Byrd, not necessarily all pro Humphrey, but not for Byrd. To round it up. And I'm spending some time at it, talking individually with the senators. I'm not quite as assiduous at it as Bobby is. He takes them home to dinner and he's out there. He just works at this constantly, and I respect him for it.
What does he have sewed up?
Oh, about 25.
You're going to lose some Democrats. I think you're going to lose that Missouri seat.
Yes, that's very possible.
I think Kearns has no chance to stand for it. And there are one or two others.
There's a danger in two other states for sure. One of them is New Mexico, and another one is California.
Cunning is in trouble.
Yes, at this time.
Yeah.
But I think that will depend very largely on how well Carter does out there, and Carter's victory out there will depend entirely on Brown.
What Brown does.
And I think Brown's going to deliver.
You think you really?
Yeah, I talked to him when I was out there recently.
Yeah.
Brown spent some time with Carter.
God, he behaved like a nothing convention, didn't he?
Brown?
Yeah.
Well, he had nothing to lose.
No.
Nothing. He's a young man. And
he's
got, in 1988, he'll be 50 years old.
several Carter people have told me they're convinced that he's going to run for president in the 1980s, even if Carter's in the White House.
Well, Carter is doing well. It won't make any difference whether he runs or not. Now, I think that Jerry Brown is smarter than that. I think he will evaluate it very carefully. I also think that he'll grow. I think Jerry Brown will grow in politics. I think his experience in the presidential was a revelation to him.
Yeah.
First of all, he had to broaden his perspective.
Yeah.
He had to take a better look than what he's had thus far. It was slightly euphoric also, you know. The real truth is that what his sorte in the national politics proved is that Carter was weak.
The weakness of Carter wants it. Yeah.
See, my worry, strictly between us, is that Carter's support, while wide, is not in depth.
It's thin.
As somebody said, it's like the Platte River, a mile wide and a foot deep. They even put it an inch. But I think it's much better than that. I think that Carter has lots of support.
Yeah.
But people keep saying to me, well, what do you think of him? Now, when anybody asks me, good Democrats are saying to me, what do you think of him? And I have to tell them, you know, I first said, well, I think he's going to win. And I believe that he has what it takes to win. But honestly, I don't know him. Know him well.
And you have to say that.
I feel I have to say that in honesty, particularly when certain people ask me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't go around pretending that we're buddy-buddy, because we're not. But we're not antagonistic. And I don't feel that. When I'm with him, the few times I've been with him, I come away feeling, as Betty knows, I come away feeling rather encouraged.
Yeah.
And I think you'll feel that way after you've been with him in planes.
Yeah.
I think one-on-one, I think that leaves a very favorable impression. And I think he just has to be a little more careful. For example, he went out there on this embargo stuff here again and said, never an embargo. Well, see, I've been attacked at home by this Republican fellow of mine because I said that when they're in short supply and the national well-being is threatened, you may have to have export licensing to control your embargo. I'm not for embargoes when there's an adequate supply.
No.
Now they all come around to this. This morning the paper, all the papers, old Brecky, that Republican, know-nothing out there.
Was he running against you?
Oh, he's mean. Let me tell you.
He is mean.
He is the meanest. He's a college professor, and he's the meanest candidate. Give me just a good old slimy politician. They understand. They understand the rules of conduct, at least. You get me one of these preacher educators all at the same time. They are really ruthless.
Yeah.
And they lie, they no regard for the truth.
None at all. Is he a professor at the university?
No, he's Professor Gus Davis Adolphus.
Oh, he's a Lutheran minister too.
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Well, let me tell you, he's got this good combination. He's at a Swedish Lutheran college with a Scandinavian name and a Catholic faith.
And he farms, Senator.
Huh?
And he farms.
And he farms, and he's pro-life and gun control.
Oh, God.
He's one degree to the right of Attila the Hun.
He's that bad. What do you think of this Mullet Dobo? Have you known him?
Yes. Dole's a conservative.
Yeah.
And he is a tough campaigner.
Tricky.
Tricky. Clever. Clever is better.
Yeah, clever.
Good sense of humor. But with a kind of he isn't a hatchet man. He carries a saber.
Sticks it in stiletto.
Yeah, stiletto, you know.
Not a hatchet man.
No.
Well, he'll do a good job, I guess.
Yes, but you see, the trouble with Ford and Dole is that they appeal to such a limited spectrum. If you listen to that convention, as a gentleman said to me last night, that anybody with an income under $20,000 a year was forgotten.
Yeah.
You know, there's no compassion there. There's no sense, no feeling of responsibility for the less fortunate, for the lower middle income. I mean, too bad, boys. I mean, you couldn't make it. The market force will hopefully take care of you. If it doesn't, if the marketplace doesn't, play, tough luck.
Yeah, Ken Galbraith made a good point. He said, how many of those men, how many of those delegates voting for, against health insurance, et cetera, have trouble paying their medical bills?
Yeah. See, they had no blacks of any consequence.
No,
very few women, particularly of the modern breed.
Yeah.
Very few young people. No Chicano.
No.
It's really mid-America upper crust. And that's why, you know, they reminded me exactly of what happens at country clubs sometimes. They were very boisterous and vociferous. And it sort of reminds me of the New Year's party that I attended at one of the clubs, you know. There's a difference between a good old hassle in a bar,
yeah,
where the working people are, than one of these where the folks decide all at once they've got to be hilarious. And these fellows, they really put, it was like a manufactured frivolity, you know.
Well,
the Reagan people, you know, and they let these things, demonstrations, they not only let them go on, they encourage them to go on and on and on, as a kind of a way to show the public they're alive.
That Wednesday night, those terrible horns. God. Well, that's why you have to say, how can Carter rule?
That's right.
I agree with you.
Difficult.
That he can. That it'll be perhaps a close election.
It could be. I think much will depend on those debates.
Yeah.
I'll tell you why. People will. You can't concentrate on everything. Remember, about 80% of everything that's done in a campaign is like chaff. It just blows away with the wind.
Yeah.
Now, people don't even know it. It's only good for the people that soldier the stuff and soldier the TV time and for the handful of workers. 80% of it is BS,
yeah,
only with less substance.
Okay.
Nobody buys it at all. I mean, it just goes. Then you get down to about 20%. You try to find the political nutrition in that 20%.
Yeah.
And the big item that you're going to focus on, two things will be, what is the media campaign, the paid media campaign?
Yeah.
And secondly, what about the debates?
They will be very
crucial.
As they were in a way in 68.
You bet. See, Nixon would never debate me in 68. Never. And not only that, but then this media of ours, they never picked it up. I kept challenging him all the time, demanding that he take me on.
Never did.
No, and I never, ever got, I never had any editorial saying, why not the public debates?
Yeah.
You know, they were so all tied up themselves in their little hang-ups that nobody could, you couldn't get through to anybody, you know.
No. God. You ended up with 0.4%.
Just imagine.
Are you going to go around the country? Campaign?
Some, but I'm not going to overdo it for several reasons. I want to be sure that I take care of my home base.
Yeah, sure.
Secondly, I haven't been asked that much.
You haven't been asked anything.
That much. I will be. I know that. Fritz and I have talked.
You've talked with Fritz?
Yeah. I told him I'd do a couple of their big labor conventions. They want me to go up to Pennsylvania, and I'll most likely do some of that. I was out in California and I did some work out there for Carter and Mondale.
And you believe that Brown will turn it out?
Yeah, I believe Brown will go to work.
But he really wants to.
Now, some people say that cynically that he wouldn't mind if Carter lost. But I think that if that were the case, he'd be held very much accountable.
Perfect.
I think
that would
hurt him.
Yeah. Exactly.
He's in a sense like I am at Mondale in Minnesota. We got to produce.
You've got to produce in your state.
You bet.
Mondale was a good choice.
You bet.
You know. And Dole, I thought, was a bad choice.
Well, they tried to placate Reagan.
Yeah.
The old, see, Reagan has been running the government for about a year.
Yeah.
The shadow.
The shadow over his shoulder.
Right. And I said that time after time, all during these months, from January on, I said, Ford has had his neck turned around like this. He sees this guy coming all the time. Ford has never looked ahead yet. He's always been looking not to the left, but to the right.
Well,
see who was passing him on the right.
And as I say again, going back to this study, it just shows that people are indifferent or turned off or cynical about.
Now that gets down to the question of whether or not you can break through that apathy barrier. And in order to break through that apathy barrier, you've got to have enthusiasm and you've got to have excitement.
Right, exactly.
You not only you got to get them registered, but in order to get them out to vote, they got to feel that there's a reason for it.
Right.
They've got to get excited about it.
And of course, that what wouldn't you say that one thing, one handicap there is that the call them intellectuals, whatever you want to, they have always had doubt. They were for the Mogudon.
Yes.
And I gave a series of three talks up at Yale. And at dinner one night, we sort of made a canvas, and you going to work for Carter? No, I don't think so. I suppose I'll vote for him. But you see, now these were the people.
That's right. See,
that would be the enthusiasm.
Absolutely. Those are the kind of people that really add the flavor to a campaign.
Right. Exactly. If you don't have them.
See, if you've got Dallesville going on.
Yeah.
And who's going to be mayor of Dallesville? You're in trouble. Or Democrats. Democrats are glandular people to win.
Yeah.
They got to smell bad, be sweaty, excited, emotional, not very rational. You know what I mean? I'll never forget, I used to say when my dear friend Adlai was running, I used to go up in North Minneapolis in 1956. He was running there against, against Ike. And then North Minneapolis, solid, good Democratic territory. And you go up in those little pubs, those little bars they have up there with the Poles and Italian Americans and others. And I, when Roosevelt was running, he'd go up there and some guy'd say, sitting at the bar, would say, that you have about three drinks. And yeah, Roosevelt is a damn communist. See? And the guy would pick up a beer bottle and hit him right across the forehead, knock him right off the stool. See? They didn't have any argument about it. I mean, about, you know, well, I don't think he is and that sort of thing. He's just cold cocked. Now in 56, fellow would say, you know that damn Stevenson, he sounds like a socialist to me. And then one of these Polack truck drivers would say, well, I don't think so. I think he's pretty good. I knew damn well we'd lost then because if the guy didn't pick up a hammer or a bat and knock him off the stool, we were in trouble, you know? And that's really a way to measure it because you've got to have your people passionate for you.
The enthusiasm factor.
You bet.
That's what I wrote after Yale.
You bet, and make no mistake about it. That's the intangible, that's the uncertain, the unknown.
Right.
And if that isn't in there, see, that's what happened in 72. You see, George McGovern, he lost after he got, he had everybody hooped up for a while, then he went out and made love to Daley, and he started making Forgot Jesse Jackson, and started, he lost a lot of his enthusiasts because he thought he was going to pick up the others.
Yeah.
But he didn't pick them up. They already had him marked.
He couldn't possibly pick them.
No.
No.
And see, in any kind of a campaign where the rules are the rules and the conduct of the country club, we lose.
Of course. And that's what Ford would like to make.
That's exactly what he wants.
His speech that night at the acceptance speech was a hell of a
good speech.
Performance.
See, he practiced. He had it measured.
Twice videotaped him.
And you know, he had rehearsed it. Now in a good, if Carter lets him get by with that rehearsal stuff, he'll be in trouble. He's got to be after him like a bantam rooster, like a flying, like a whirling dervish. He's got to be like old Armstrong. There used to be a prize fighter by the name of Armstrong. I forgot his first name. But he was a dynamo. He held three championships at one time. And he was in there, and then when you'd see him fight, there was feet kicking, arms flailing, head bobbing. He was all over the guy. And that's what you got to do with old Jerry Ford. You got to get him running his head into the wall and bumping on the airplane and stuff.
And at times, Carter does not give the impression of being angry.
Angry. And he doesn't give the impression of really going after the juggler, except on the basis that he is right. I mean, he projects a kind of firmness about himself. Which scares some people.
Yeah, which scares people.
That's right. Yeah. But what he needs to do is to go right after Mr. Ford, just get after him, because Ford is a slow mover, see? That's why they had him at center in football. He didn't have to move, he just had to crouch over. You see, he never played halfback, quarterback, end. He wasn't a wide receiver. He couldn't call signals. No. He couldn't make an end run. They just had him there, just right down the middle, spread his legs and put the ball through. And that's a fact. And the only way to handle a guy like that is beat him over the head all day long.
Right, I know.
You tell Cartwright.
Shall I do that?
Yeah, just right on him all day long. Just peck, 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 peck. You don't need to give him a knockout punch. You don't need to, it doesn't need to be, you know, like Tony Galento, you know, just come in and lay one on him. It needs to be like Muhammad Ali, just peck, 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 and pretty soon the guy is just, he wakes up.
Day
after day, just on him.
Yeah, my wife Jane is so enthusiastic about Cartwright. She really is. Although she has wavering moments, but she said she may even go to it.
Well, that might be a good idea.
Perhaps in her own state of California.
See, we need, for this election, we need people like your wife that are enthusiastic about the man.
Yeah.
Because that spreads, that's contagious.
Yeah.
We cannot just have sleepy town, Plainsville, to win. Yeah. You've got to get it revved up. You've got to get a little of that Italian-American blood. You got to have a few street fights, in the sense of fist fights I'm talking about, over your candidate. You got to get our people really revved up.
Yeah, but they're not.
They're not yet, but it's too little early. It's not
too
fair.
Early.
It's not really fair. You see, what's happened here is we've been pushing this campaign business constantly back too early. That's part of the media again. They started, the day that Carter gets elected, after he's had his inaugural, he's delivered his State of the Union address, the Time magazine will have a story about who will be running in 1980. They'll have it all geared up again. They'll have Jerry Brown up there, and they'll have two or three, they'll find some young governor, and they'll have them in that paper. Well, time almighty, what you need to do is to save those punches and do everything that you can do and get ready for October, because the attention span in politics.
So low.
You've got to be able to hold your stuff until you let them have it.
Sure.
That's what it takes.
Well, I'll give him a message.